The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you've noticed that Christians often have different ideas about what it actually means to serve Christ. Wouldn't this be a fallibility with the Bible? Well, my friend, I can see how you might feel that way, but actually, this is only a fallibility with people and with human nature. The Bible, the Word of God, is very clear. Some people ignore its plain commands and rationalize. They cherry-pick the verses they like. They conveniently gloss over the verses they don't like, or often well-intentioned Christians committed to honest Bible study discover that the Bible does not comment on every social or political dilemma. Now then, here's what I find strange. Instead of respecting that sincere people might disagree out in the real world, most people today, especially in America, do respect that sincere superheroes might disagree. They might disagree in DC Comics or DC movies. They might disagree in Marvel Comics or Marvel movies. Here to discuss this unusual phenomenon and offer some reviews of recent movie releases is film critic and short story writer Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me on again, Bob. I really appreciate it. And, you know, you've left out the conflict between DC and Marvel, choosing DC over Marvel or Marvel over
I grew up as a DC person, but I must say some of those Marvel movies have been great.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, both versions that they did of Spider-Man, I thought they were all done really well.
Ah, well, you're in luck because they're coming out with another one and it looks like it might be awesome because we've got Spider-Man in Captain America Civil War.
Yes, I saw that, and I didn't even expect him. He made kind of it was more than a cameo.
Yeah.
He wasn't in a lot of the movie, but what he was in was pretty funny.
Yeah, he was awesome. I was really surprised, because I didn't like the last Spider-Man. He was a little too negative, trying to be a little too edgy, I think, and this was just, I mean, outright hilarious.
I wasn't quite as deep as you. I just thought he wasn't Tobey Maguire-ish enough.
Right. And, I mean, there is something to be said for Tobey Maguire, but I think this new guy is going to really...
He was good, yeah.
He's going to knock it out of the park, as long as the script is good and the directing is good.
Yeah, like they say, if it's not on the page, it's not on the stage.
Oh, well, I didn't know they said that. Well
now you learn something yourself by coming on this program.
Okay. But talking about Captain America, I wanted to talk about X-Men also. I saw a couple of neat themes, and something I've mentioned in the past... And I think you even did a follow-up show about it. I was talking about forgiveness when I spoke about Star Wars. And
you did that when you substitute hosted for me. And then I picked up on the theme and came back and expounded on it, I think, the very next week.
Okay. So, you get the last word in no matter what I do, huh?
However, I was going to say it's nice to see you again. I think the last three times you've done this show, it's when I was being completely replaced and out of town. We have not done a show together in a long time.
Right. You're on to me, Bob.
Which means that today you have to deal with me interjecting more. I'm sure it's probably more fun the weeks I'm not here.
No, I won't comment on that.
Well,
just kidding.
You did just comment on that.
That's how it works, huh? I've got a career in politics, I think, coming up here. I'm already practicing. And actually, since, you know, we missed the Academy Awards show, and I'm sorry about that. I was out of commission. I was ill at the time. But I do feel like I should comment at least on one thing. And we really do need a moment of silence to mourn the fact that Mad Max Fury Road did not win the Best Picture Academy Award. I do not know what's wrong with Hollywood when Mad Max Fury Road does not win a Best Picture.
Now, I didn't see Mad Max. I saw some of the other nominees.
There were no other nominees we're seeing, Bob. We're talking about Mad Max Fury Road.
Well, you were going to come on and do almost a whole show on the winner, right?
Yeah,
and you did think that was a good one.
Yeah, I liked it. I did.
Spotlight, is that what that was called?
Yes, Spotlight. I think it had a lot of depth, and there is quite a bit we could talk about with that movie because it delves into the sexual abuse scandal in the priesthood in Boston. In the, I don't know, the late 1990s.
Yeah, I think 2000s. That was the 90s.
Yeah. So, and I found the movie very interesting, but, you know.
But no Mad Max.
No Mad Max. And talk about superheroes. Come on, Mad Max. He's the
now,
man.
Now, was Mad Max in the tradition that I'm seeing a lot of the movies now, like Jurassic World and like they're doing with the female version of Ghostbusters, where on one hand it's a remake, but on the other hand it's like a sequel because they acknowledge the events of the early movie later on. So was this a Mad Max that referred to the Mel Gibson Mad Max in the story, or was it a whole remake?
Yeah, good question. I think we need to ponder that for a while because actually there's not really a good answer for that. They did have a new actor instead of Mel Gibson. And I actually felt like they could have had Mel Gibson, but the thing is, the same director, the original director of the first three movies, the original writer and director of the first three Mad Max movies, did this movie.
Okay.
So it's there's going to be another one because it was a spectacular
hit. So was it a continuation of the story or a remake?
Well, it's just another story in the storyline.
So it was just another something in the Mad Max universe. So there was no contradiction between
this. Right, and no, there's really not much
continuity.
Was it
a reimagining like Battlestar Galactica?
No.
Okay.
I mean, except that there's another guy that's Mad Max and they did kind of clarify that Mad Max.
These days, people think Mel Gibson is a real Mad Max with some of his behavior.
Well, so see, that's the
they
wrong
might have
kind
thought
of
he was a risky commodity to use again. I don't know.
Possibly. I was wondering the same thing, but it was years ago that they were. I mean, this movie was in production on and off for, 10 years. So, then they had always planned to replace Mel Gibson. So. And Mel Gibson was okay with it. I think he was a good sport about it. I don't think he had any problems with it.
And he's a very good actor, regardless of some of the stupid things he says off camera.
Right. And just to be clear, Mad Max is angry Max. He's not crazy Max. He's mad because they ran over his family. They killed his wife and son.
Oh. And
so
they didn't give him the Academy Award either. So he's madder. Madder Max.
See, now, yes. Exactly. I think that the next movie, he's really going to be all over it. Though, the one change they did make is they implied that he was kind of crazy in this movie. So maybe they've lost continuity. I don't know. But it's the same director and writer. So, you know, there you go. But even if you're mad, you've got to, you know, embrace forgiveness. Because that's what I was going to talk about today. See, there's a segue for you from Mad Max to Captain America, because actually Captain America's not mad ever. It seems like he's righteously angry, but he doesn't ever seem to be mad. The guy that's mad is, well, Iron Man. Iron Man seems to get mad at a lot of stuff, even though he's snide and, you know, snarky about everything.
Now, I have to ask you, did you also see Batman versus Superman, or was it Superman versus Batman? I forgot how they. I think it was Superman versus.
No, it's Batman versus Superman.
Batman was the first name in the title.
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was okay. This is a real important thing to be dissecting.
It's like, now you've got me confused.
Well, I thought it was technically a Superman movie with Batman in it, so I would think Superman would come first. But anyway,
no, it's the story.
Who's stealing from Batman came first? Wow.
Yeah.
Who's stealing from who in this let's have civil wars amongst our superheroes?
Oh, well, because they're both storylines from the comic book. So it's not
which comic book came out first.
Okay, I don't know. That would be a question.
You know,
for
Nick, which comic book came out?
Yeah.
Here comes Nick.
Now he's being challenged.
Okay.
Are we hearing you over there, too?
It's the 80s Batman versus Superman was Dark Knight Returns.
It is Dark Knight Returns, yeah.
And that's the 80s, I think, or the
early 90s. That was 1986, I believe, it started coming out.
Okay. And I don't know anything about Civil War at all. I mean, I don't know any of the Marvel.
That came out in 2007.
Really?
And,
okay.
Yeah, it's a relatively recent one.
Wow, I'm surprised.
But it seems to be catching on, and it's just interesting because we're seeing a lot of that now. A lot of conservatives are just not knowing what to do about the next election. It's just interesting to see well-intentioned people take different sides for sometimes for good reasons on each side. It's interesting. It allowed some depth to these movies that you don't always see in them.
Okay, I see what you're saying here. So you're kind of expounding a little bit of a political commentary from Captain
America.
Well,
I don't know if that was their intention, but mm-hmm. It is coincidental that it's coming out at a time where I can really understand. I'm meeting fellow Christians and fellow conservatives just uncertain at times what to do
right.
about certain issues. And I don't feel any judgment because I know that each person means well.
Right.
And it just gives you a little bit of a glimpse as to what it might have been like to have been in the Civil War that we had, even though that was really about slavery. You did have people like Robert E. Lee, who hated slavery, was never for it, never owned slaves, but he still felt that if his home state of Virginia was attacked, he had to defend it. It kind of puts you in the minds of some of those people.
Right, I guess so. Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the good things about art and movies is that it helps us to sort of open our hearts and minds to ideas like you're talking about here, where we wouldn't necessarily be able to connect with people 200 years ago or 100 years ago, what they were going through. And
but
now,
if Spider-Man and Robert Downey Jr. are going through it, then we connect.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. Who can't connect with Spider-Man when he's so awesome?
Well, it does say something about how powerful the arts are, because yeah. that probably awakens emotions in people that maybe don't even follow the news or follow history.
Right, right. And that is a good point. And, you know, like, you know me, I come in and I talk about the connection to Christian spirituality or to God or to, you know, themes in the Bible or things that I look at with my Christian worldview that I see in these movies. So I think that, you know, I've always felt that that's the beauty of even the mainstream stuff that people have a problem calling art, like, you know, Transformers or whatever. I mean, these movies still do have a lot to offer if you're willing to look. I mean, and you may not always agree with the theme, but being able to look and being open-minded enough to be able to kind of expound on a movie, even if you disagree with it, to be able to engage with it is, I think, a really important human quality and something the arts really is great about giving us. You know, it's a gift from the arts to help us to see things a little differently.
Okay, you're listening to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boobian here to review some of the latest movies. We'll be right back.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Now, if you were with us during the last segment, I am not trying to ignore the big elephant in the room, is that we had some horrible news, a horrific shooting in Orlando. I will be talking about that more on next week's show, but I wasn't going to unschedule the show that I had planned with Mark. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is every time we change our schedule for the terrorists, we give in to the terrorists. That's exactly what they're trying to do. The other thing is my program's not on every day. It's on once a week, and I want an eclectic program that doesn't talk only about the news every single week. We also talk about religion. We also talk about the arts. So this is an arts week, but I will talk about that a lot more on next week's program. Now, here again is Mark Booby.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Well, you know, that's, I think you're bringing up a good point. And I think the art, we were talking about how the art opens our minds and connects us to other ideas that we're not necessarily going to engage in. But, you know, we live in a post 9/11 world, and it's taken a while for the arts to kind of catch up with what happened on 9/11.
True.
And I felt like the Dark Knight movie was the first really major motion picture to actually engage in some of the sort of the mindset of a post 9/11 world, and engaged on the level of both politics and on the personal level as well, on how to deal with what does it mean to be dealing with a terrorist and how do you deal with the terrorists. And I think that even now when we're looking at movies like Captain America and Civil War and X-Men Apocalypse, and I'm sure even the previous Superman movie too, where you've got people that just are bent on destruction in some way, how do you respond to them and what's your personal response? So I think that while it's not going to answer questions about specific events, of course, or answer the question of good and evil, or answer the question of why this specific bad thing happened, at least it can open our minds to how we respond in general to certain things. And timely for me, and personally, I had a really difficult time with 9/11 because I saw what happened and it was so horrendous. And how do I engage with people from the Middle East that, you know, I pretty much blamed for what happened? How do I go on with life and have friends, or, you know that there's people out there like that? How do I move on?
And of course, ideologies and evil transcend cultures. There are many terrorists today, many Muslim terrorists right. today who are not from the Middle East.
Right. And
they're from Europe. And there are many people that are evil, pure evil, who are not Muslim terrorists, because that's our joint heritage as right. human beings. The Bible says we have a sin nature.
Sin is universal, certainly. And, you know, but it's certainly easy to point at the other guy. I mean, that's one of the things that I think racism is just always going to be with us, because it's too easy to point at somebody that's different. And even in my heart, as much as I hate racism, I will find myself having racist thoughts once in a while. And so how do I deal with those thoughts? How do I go on? And I think Captain America Civil War, sort of one of the undercurrents of the film, dealt with forgiveness. Now, I had my segue earlier about forgiveness, but my segue got segued away. So here I am back on the subject.
Could that be a sequel to the song Slip Sliding Away?
Right.
My segue
went away. Yeah, well, call Paul Simon and I'll take any money he wants to give me. But so one thing that I really felt interesting about Civil War. Now, first of all, Civil War was a really fun movie to watch because you get to see the Avengers have this one battle between each other. And, you know, you're rooting for everybody because you like everybody. And it's just this really fun moment in the scene, even though they're, you know, beating each other up, it's still just a great scene. And there's a lot of great moments in the movie like that. And the fact that the directors, Joe and Anthony Russo, they come from sort of they did the previous Captain America movie and they've done some other films, but they come from Community, which is a comedy series, and Arrested Development, which is another very popular comedy series. And so I think some of the humor that they were able to bring out in this film in particular is sort of in their blood. And so I really appreciated it. So a lot of the stuff that you saw throughout the movie actually was fairly light, even though there were some heavy themes that were presented.
Well, and one thing I really liked, there was very good dialogue and very good character development. I have grown over the years to like action movies less and less, even though I used to love them, because when it's nonstop action, but I don't care about the characters, then I don't care about the action. And what's interesting about these Marvel movies is it almost seems like you're seeing nonstop action, but the amount of dialogue and character development they put in there seems to work, at least for me.
Yeah, well, it helps when they're engaging in a lot of dialogue during the action, like this movie.
I'm a dialogue lover. The less dialogue, the less I like the movie. 2001 A Space Odyssey would be a rare exception to that.
Right, okay, yeah, right. How many lines was in that movie? I think there's a count.
Five, maybe six.
Yeah, yeah, more lines in that Arnold Schwarzenegger spoke in The Terminator than in all of 2001.
Oh, I forgot about Schwarzenegger. There are times when less lines and dialogue is better. If the person can't act, that has something to do with it.
Well, you got to give him The Terminator. The first Terminator movie, he was
awesome. Well, all he was doing was playing a robot. Even Schwarzenegger could pull that.
Well, I know, that's a good joke, but, you know, I don't agree with that, but... You know, we can disagree. That's okay. But now, one of the questions that I had in Captain America that, it's the funny thing is you have the Civil War, but the real war starts at the very end of the movie because it's the war between Captain America and Iron Man. It's a very personal war. It's not really all of the Avengers, even though they got kind of dragged into
it. But they have us understanding each person's reasons, sometimes based on misunderstandings for wanting to go the way. They're two people that really want to do the right thing. You don't have a good person and a bad person.
Right. What happens is they're manipulated into this revelation that the Winter Soldier, who is Bucky Barnes, that's Captain America's best friend, who also got transported from the past into the present, that he killed Iron Man's parents. He killed Tony Stark's parents. And he was made into a sort of mindless robot, not unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger, but probably, you know, gets more credit for acting than Arnold does. And he kills kills these innocent people, really. And Captain America knows about it at some point. We're never told that. And then it comes out in this near the end of this film. And the antagonist in the film, the bad guy, is actually, that's his goal, is to tear apart the Avengers by bringing out this fact that Bucky Barnes, who Captain America cares deeply for, killed Iron Man's parents. And so it's obviously going to cause this huge conflict. And that's, to me, that was the real war that actually came about. And to me, that was the real meat and heart of the film. Because, I mean, it begs the question, why would Captain America be so willing to forgive Bucky Barnes for the horrible things he did? And yet, Iron Man absolutely has no question that he's not forgiving this guy and he wants to destroy him. So that's to me was what was so engaging in the film. And that's where I wanted to talk about forgiveness.
Okay, more discussion about Captain America Civil War from film critic Mark Boobian when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's latest novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel.
Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks again, Bob. So I kind of left off with the question is, why would Captain America be so willing to forgive Bucky Barnes? And why is Iron Man so... I mean, that is not even a question that he would ask. He's so far away from that. He is bent on vengeance against Bucky Barnes. Iron Man is. So now... Some of the obvious things to get out of the way is obviously Captain America was friends with Bucky Barnes, and so he knows him, he cares about him, he loves him, and he is willing to forgive him. Another obvious thing is that Bucky Barnes was not in control of his own actions, not in entirety, so that he was acting as a robot. He was brainwashed and forced into, not forced, but programmed into these murders that he committed over.
He was saying, this is not really my friend. This is not really him.
In a sense, yes, exactly. That's not who you are. You're not this killer, basically. And it's easy to forgive somebody when they're not, I mean, if it was possible to do an action that you didn't have any control over, obviously it's much easier to forgive the person for that.
Well, and then even today when people do actions that they do have control over, those that knew them as little kids, or, you know, you always have the mother on TV going, he's a good boy. Well, she knows everything about his life.
Right.
Unfortunately, there still has to be a justice for the action, not a vengeance.
Right.
But a justice. And the difference between vengeance and justice is sometimes very blurred.
It's a tough line to draw. And certainly Iron Man was not out for justice. He just wanted to kill Bucky Barnes. He wanted to...
Because it was personal with him and his loved ones.
And so, and that's the other obvious thing that, you know, Bucky killed his mom. And it's interesting I felt it was interesting that he focused on the murder of his mother over the murder of his father. Because that ties in... I think that was a really nice piece of consistency, because he didn't really care for his dad that much. You know, he had a really rough relationship with his dad, and that's all we ever hear about. But there's this moment where you get this intimate thing about his mom. And so he's really torn up more about his mother than about his parents, quote unquote, parents both. Anyway, that's just a little aside about Iron Man's character. Of course, it's going to be insanely difficult to forgive somebody for murdering somebody you love so deeply as Iron Man loved his mom. I mean, she was the only probably consistent thing in his life. She was a real mother, as opposed to this, you know, father that was, you know, a perfectionist and probably browbeating him throughout his life. So, of course, there's going to be hurdles in front of Iron Man for forgiveness. And of course, Captain America is going to be more willing to forgive. And even if it weren't for Captain America's knowledge of who Bucky is, I think Captain America's character would be more willing to forgive than Iron Man's. That's just the way they are as characters. And I think that's also speaks greatly to the way the movies have developed them, because you know that Captain America really wants to do the right thing. That is Captain America. Iron Man, he wants to do the right thing, but, you know, he doesn't always have to. You kind of get the sense that Tony will do whatever it takes.
Kind of marches to the beat of a different drum.
Yeah, exactly. So, now there's a really interesting point in the movie where there's this three-way fight between them, you know, Bucky, Captain America, and Iron Man. It's, you know, two against one, but Iron Man's got all this junk in it. You know, he's got the suit and the computer and every weapon known to human beings at the time, and so they're, you know, obviously it's a pretty big fight scene. While this is going on, the bad guy in the film, he's sort of standing off watching it, and the Black Panther comes up and kind of captures him. And the Black Panther is a really good character, because he's introspective, and they did a good job developing that in his character. And he ends up having to forgive Bucky Barnes, or he ends up having to be able to realize that Bucky Barnes did not kill his father. That's another murder that takes place directly in the film. And his willingness to actually engage in the idea that the guy I've been chasing all this time is not the right person. I think that that's a really profound thing about that character, because a lot of people would just say, you got him. I don't care. That's the guy. And they're, you know, it's hard to say maybe he didn't do it. It's, you want that closure. You want that. You want justice to be done. And so I think that that is part of human nature. And to see somebody be able to be introspective and go beyond that was, I think, a really great part of the film and a great part of this character. So he's, you see that he's able to observe things, and he talks to the guy, the bad guy that he captures. And he says, and the Black Panther says, you know, vengeance has consumed you, the bad guy, because that's his motivation for being a bad guy. He wants vengeance on the Avengers. And then he says it's consuming them, you know, as the, it's consuming Iron Man and Captain America and Bucky. Now, what I like about this line is he doesn't say it's consuming him, Iron Man. He says it's consuming them. And it is. Iron Man is out for vengeance. Captain America is trying to stop him. Bucky is actually kind of fighting for his life, but he's got a lot of remorse in his character. So he's almost only fighting as a, just to preserve his life. He's not really fighting because he feels that he deserves to live. It's almost like that animalistic desire to continue on your life.
And when each character has a separate agenda, even if it's an understandable agenda, even if it's a good agenda, there could be a more important universal agenda that they're not paying attention to.
Yeah, that's right. And so, but what I liked about this line is that the idea that vengeance is, even though Iron Man was the only one out for vengeance, it is affecting these other two guys. Vengeance is consuming them. It's Iron Man's vengeance, but it's still consuming these other two people. And so this, once again, begs the question, why forgiveness? You know, forgiveness is an imperative for us Christians in the Bible, but we often think about how what this other person did, and we want to forgive that other person, and we are so concerned about, you know, how they respond to us forgiving them and saying, I forgive you, even if their heart is broken and evil and, you know, beyond salvation, so to speak. Why would we forgive? And I think this line really tells us why, because seeking vengeance is destructive in a kind of global sense, not just to your own self. Vengeance will consume you, certainly, because that's all there is if there's no forgiveness, and it will consume those around you as well. And that's a brilliant observation that's put forth in this film.
Okay, well, Mark's observations will get even more brilliant when we return. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker, Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Been talking about Captain America Civil War. I had brought up earlier, Mark, I believe you said on the air you did not see Batman versus Superman. I did see it. I heard horrible things about it. Maybe it's because I heard so many horrible things about it that when I saw it, it didn't seem that bad. I particularly heard what a horrible actor Ben Affleck is. Well, I've never confused him for Laurence Olivier anyway. And his acting did seem horrible, but I have to say I couldn't tell how much I was influenced by popular opinion because I was so aware that this is Ben Affleck. Watch his acting. Watch the look on his face.
Right.
I if I didn't know it was Ben Affleck, I still probably wouldn't have thought it was a great performance, but perhaps not as terrible. But it didn't do too well at the box office, from what I understood.
Actually, no, it did.
Well,
it
the opening didn't do week, well opening weekend, but didn't it start dissipating right after opening weekend?
No, so it actually has done very well. Now, it hasn't done Captain America: Civil War well, which has made $1 billion worldwide.
But it didn't do well enough for you to go see it. Why did you skip it? That doesn't seem like a movie you would normally skip.
Same reason I skipped the Academy Awards show, because I was sick. I had actually bought tickets and I had to give my ticket away.
So you could still on DVD catch that stellar Ben Affleck performance.
Yes, I will too, actually. When it's on Blu-ray, don't say the DVD word anymore. It's Blu-ray. Bob, how long have I been working you on that? Come on.
I actually have purchased a few Blu-rays and I have a Blu-ray player now.
Okay.
So I'm stepping in.
Yes, right. Way down the line. Hey, this technology is only 20 years old,
well,
10 years old.
That's a secret. You wait till they're cheaper.
Right. That's true. Yeah, and I really did want to see it because I loved the Superman movie, and I loved the Batman movies, the newer Batman movies, and those are two characters I despised in film that recent times have done a really good job at sort of re-imaging them or imaging them. Well, Batman was not really re-imaged; he was imaged closer to the Dark Knight type of character, where Superman was kind of re-imaged and.
When the Batman masks are on, all the actors sound the same because they all talk like this.
Right.
But when the mask is off and he's Bruce Wayne, that's where you're really aware that it's Ben Affleck.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, because it looks like Ben Affleck, right, Bob?
Yeah.
It's hey, that's not Christian Bale. Hey, that's not, you know.
Exactly. But I think public opinion can really have an influence, even though much as we try not to let it do that.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. Like the X-Men movie has gotten a lot of negative critical attention. And when I saw it, I liked it. I thought it was fine. I mean, they did try to do a little too much, and the villain isn't as he's not very threatening, to be honest. That I think is the drawback to the film. You've got a villain that's not really destroying the heck out of the world. I mean, that's what you expected from Apocalypse, but he's not really doing that.
Yeah,
just
it works
around
the other way with public opinion too. Before I saw Forrest Gump, I was hearing from people the best movie I've ever seen in my life. I've got it on my list of probably the 5 worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm on. I like that list. So I've got him on my list too. You know, so I agree with that. And Titanic again. Yeah, that's another one.
Okay, but it didn't live up to the public opinion. It was just okay.
Well,
you didn't even think it was just okay.
No, I didn't. But that's okay because you know what? It's an old movie and we've forgotten about it. We're talking about Captain America now. Another observation I want to make is that. In this line that I've been discussing about the Black Panther saying to our villain here, he points out that the vengeance is consuming his friends or his new friends, the Avengers here, and it's consumed this fellow and made him seek vengeance. And then he says, I'm done letting it consume me, because he recognizes that that was his goal, to seek vengeance for the death of his father. And then he says, justice will come soon enough. And the villain puts a gun in his mouth and attempts suicide. And the Black Panther stops him. But what if he had succeeded and we still had this line, justice will come soon enough? Because the way I kind of view the world, and I think this is true of the world, justice is really a fleeting thing in our society. We seek it, we get it, but I've seen movies like The Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger that plays off the idea that our system is broken and there's not justice to be done. And in the end of that movie, they actually murder the bad guy. They murder him. It's premeditated murder, which what made that movie a terrible movie, in my opinion. But, you know, that's what this view of how fleeting and how hard it is to actually accomplish true justice. But if he had killed himself, in reality, he would have faced true justice, at least from the Christian perspective, because then he would be facing God and He was unrepentant. He didn't care. He wanted vengeance. That's all that drove him until he was willing to commit suicide. And this idea that, oh, I'm going to go spend the rest of eternity with my family now that I'm shooting myself in the head. That's not going to happen. That's not the way it works. The Bible makes it pretty clear. You don't get to spend time with your family if you reject Christ and, you know, go on to this end run for vengeance. That's just not the way it works. You don't get to go visit your family. There's another place, a lot warmer, that you go to. So I think that's a challenging line that, you know, justice will come soon enough because it has this sort, it's sort of this double-edged sword. But he did stop the suicide. And so the notion in the Avengers movies, they're not going to question justice so much. Well, actually they did as in the Civil War portion, but for this individual, for the bad guy, there's always justice done, at least so far in the Avengers movies. You see justice happen as the culmination of the film. And in this case, I think we did as well. Now, I think another thing that kind of blocks us in our modern society, we are not super great at forgiveness in general because we're also not really great at apologies. My mother-in-law once told me, don't say the words, I'm sorry, because they don't mean anything. And I think she had a good point. I didn't agree with her because I think saying you're sorry is our way of asking for forgiveness or apologizing. But her point was that you say it so often, it becomes meaningless. And I think that there is a little bit of truth there. But let's take that a little further. Something I hear often, I've heard throughout my life, and my daughter, actually, my youngest daughter pointed this out to me, that a friend of hers would say this to her when she would express frustration. Her friend would say, I'm sorry you feel that way. Now,
that's not a real apology.
That isn't. It puts all of the onus back
on you.
You're
the problem.
Right,
I'm so sorry you're having a problem with this.
Right. But it's a very, very, very,
very common
thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're terrible at apologies. I mean, that's not an apology. It doesn't even count, but we think it's an apology.
And politicians have that down to a fine art. Instead of coming out and saying, I was wrong, I should not have said this, they explain what they meant or they regret that people took it the way they did. Right. Instead of just saying, I made a stupid comment, let me take it back now.
Yeah, I'm sorry you misinterpreted me.
Yeah, yeah. See, but if you had your act a little more together like I do, maybe right. You wouldn't have interpreted.
Yeah, still elect me. I'm awesome, right?
Yeah.
So another really great thing, Captain America, he's this great character. You know, he's the driving force for forgiveness in the film. He's the one that forgives. He's the one that kind of makes forgiveness stand out. And again, it's his character. It's kind of what you expect from him. But at the end of the movie, he sends this letter after, you know, everything falls apart between Captain America and Tony Stark, that he sends this letter to Tony Stark, Iron Man, and it's this awesome apology. I mean, he actually apologizes. He says, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about your parents. And he doesn't just say, I'm sorry, but he says why he did it, which shows true repentance. He says, I thought I was trying to spare your feelings, but in reality, I was sparing mine. So that's why he didn't want to tell Iron Man about who killed Iron Man's parents, even though he knew. So this was a beautiful moment that wrapped up the movie, and I thought that that was a really great element. And you did get the sense that forgiveness might actually come after this film is over, or at least the foundation is being built for it, for Tony Stark to maybe step onto at some point.
Okay, we'll be back with film critic Mark Boobian for one more segment.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, Mark, we're down to our last segment, but it's always good having you. We'll be in the middle of something when we sign off, so let me tell you again, it's nice to, it's been a while since I've seen you, it's been a while since I've done a radio show with you, so always appreciate having you.
Oh, thanks, Bob, and it's always a pleasure to come on, and I really, really enjoy coming onto your show and listening to your show, actually, when I'm not on it, too, so that's, this is a gift you give me. Thank you very much. So just to kind of wrap up a little bit with the, with Captain America, so the at the end of the film, you get this tension between forgiveness and vengeance. And it seems to me, it seems pretty clear that vengeance is the road to destruction. And it's the destruction of you and those around you, because that is basically what Tony Stark was after at the end of the movie. He was didn't care about anything but vengeance, and he didn't care about the consequences or anything. He was just wrapped up in destroying, killing Bucky Barnes. Now, just to bring this back to how I felt after 9/11 and terrorism, kind of weird to make this connection now when I'm talking about a superhero movie, but still, the arts. After 9/11, when we invaded Afghanistan, I was happy we did that. I was all for it. Now, I'm the crazy liberal guy, you know, anti-war, totally, you know, don't, you know, I protested the first Persian Gulf War, Desert Shield, whatever, you know, that's how I am. And so here's this change of heart for me. I wanted to see the terrorists get it. That's all I cared about. I was actually seeking vengeance. And that was what I embraced at that time, immediately after 9/11. And it's taken years for me to recognize that that really was something in me that I've got to let go. And it's something I have to continue to remind myself that, you know, I can hate as much as I want, but it's not going to do anything for me. It's really going to ultimately end up destroying me.
Well, because there's two facets to forgiveness. One is if the person receives the forgiveness and repents, it can heal the relationship.
Right.
But the other one is even if the person doesn't accept the forgiveness, we still need to heal our own bitterness that we have. Now, I was going to ask you, though, what would you say to somebody who says it wasn't so much about vengeance, because if somebody from Afghanistan repented, if a Taliban member gave his life to Christ, I forgive him. But they said, I supported the war in Afghanistan to try to prevent another terrorist attack to happening, not to say, okay, we're going to kill you now.
Oh,
so that's a whole different motive that some supported the war.
I'm not saying that vengeance was our reason for going to act. For me personally, I was way up, go, because I want them killed. I don't care.
And some of that's valid. It's justice. They deserve it. But I think if it becomes an end in itself and we're not looking for the fact that we're going to stop it from happening is the overall
thing. And I didn't care. I did, of course, care that, okay, we'll kill the terrorists and it'll stop. But I was so wrapped up.
You were thinking, kill the terrorists even if it doesn't stop.
Yeah, right. Just kill them, because I wanted vengeance. I wanted them
destroyed. And there's a part of us that I think is aligned with the universe properly, whether that should happen. But again, we can get obsessed with that. And that's what I think you're saying.
And that's where hatred drives us. Vengeance, it drives us to vengeance.
So you became a little Robert Downey Jr. with Afghanistan.
Hey, that's actually, I don't mind that comparison.
Hey, it worked out okay after all. I got to become Robert Downey Jr.
Hey, all right. So, so let's talk. We just got a few minutes to talk about the X-Men, but there's a wide range of things to talk about with the X-Men. Also, I like the movie. It's Quicksilver that just makes the movie. Just like Spider-Man was the shining light in that you're surprised by in Captain America, Quicksilver in X-Men Apocalypse is the shining light that you actually got to see in Days of Future Past. Is that right? Yeah, I think so. And he was awesome in that movie, but he gets a better scene in this one, and it's just wonderful. But now, what's interesting about X-Men is it's starting to diverge from what we saw in the original X-Men movies from the 90s. And it's the same director, same writer, Bryan Singer. But because we've got a different timeline, it's actually going a different way. Now, Magneto has a family at the beginning of the film, and he is actually, in a sense, repentant seeming because he's sort of rejected what he's done before. Now, let's be clear. Magneto has killed thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people in the previous X-Men movies. And he didn't care. He would have killed them. He wanted to kill them because they were humans, not X-Men, not the next greater human being that he saw himself as. And that's sort of, that's been Magneto's character throughout the films, that, you know, he sees that there's this war coming between normals and mutants, and he's on the side of the mutants all the way. And so we got to see him destroy a lot of stuff, and he's the bad guy. But we have Charles Xavier, the good guy, constantly trying to bring Magneto around in every movie, right there in Magneto's face. You're not like this. This isn't you. Come back. Come stop doing what you're doing. Recognizing that what Magneto's doing is wrong. Obviously, he's killing thousands of people. It is wrong. But also, they're not just the willingness to forgive, but the willingness to embrace this person in order to, I guess, bring them to salvation in a sense. I mean, that really is what Charles Xavier is ultimately going to give Magneto if Magneto does turn around. Now, the thing about Magneto's family in the beginning of the film is you see Magneto love his wife, love his daughter, given into something that he had never really engaged in as a character before. He'd been in a concentration camp. He loved his mother, but it was sort of this brutal thing as depicted on film because you see her being killed, being used to manipulate him. So there's not really any solid, loving relationship that Magneto has had. And so kind of where this is going is sort of obvious. I saw it coming. It was, and I didn't want it to come that way. But of course, Magneto's got this great loving relationship. He's renounced his Magneto-ness. He doesn't call himself Magneto. And unfortunately, his wife and daughter are killed in front of him. And it's actually, they want to capture Magneto. They realize he's a mutant, so they want to, and he's the mutant that killed all those hundreds of thousands of people in the previous movie, so they want to bring him to justice. And they accidentally kill his wife and daughter in the attempt to capture him. And he flies off the handle in perfect Magneto character and kills every single person there instantly, just with one little piece of metal. There's like 20 or 30 people he just murders outright, even though it was an accident. And what's amazing about this moment, though, is that he's just killed these guys. And, you know, every time you've ever seen him kill anybody, he just walks away, doesn't care. Just, you know, they're not mutants. I've killed them. And even if they are mutants, they're against me. I've killed them. That's what I had to do. He actually falls on his knees, throws his arms around his two dead family members, his wife and daughter, and he screams to the sky. He screams, "Is this what you want from me? Is this who I am?" And it's his recognition that he's done something horrible, that there's something horrible in his heart, and that he's crying. He is truly crying out to God, "Why am I like this? And is this what you made me to be? Is this all I have?" And he's torn apart by this. And ultimately, this is what leads to his salvation at the end of the film. And this is where we deviate from the other X-Men timeline. Magneto actually does come to regret what he's done. And he wants to be a good guy, so to speak. But he finds his salvation. And it's due to the persistence of those around him that are willing to offer him that forgiveness and offer him that salvation. This would be the greatest terrorist alive at the time, in a sense, and yet there are people that love him and are able to bring him to salvation. I'm not saying that's what will always happen, but it's an interesting thing.
A lot of depth from movies based originally on comic books, but that shows the power of the arts. Mark, good to see you. We'll have you on again soon. We'll see you all next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.